reached the final level. The Spicy McNugget side mission. Maximum flavour, crispy crunch, and a spicy dip with a kick.
Are you ready?
Spicy McNuggets, for a limited time only. Until the 9th of September 25. Fees apply to delivery. Participation and price may vary. Subject to availability. Serving times apply.
Ready to launch your business? Get started with the commerce platform made for entrepreneurs. Shopify is specially designed to help you start, run, and grow your business with easy customizable themes that let you build your brand, marketing tools that get your products out there, integrated shipping solutions that actually save you time. From startups to scale-ups, online, in person, and on the go, Shopify is made for entrepreneurs like you.
Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com/setup.
You're watching and listening to Peak to Pit, Allie Peak, TJ Pittinger, coming to you live on this Veterans Day. And we've got a lot of college football to talk about. I've got a lot of tears to cry, but here we are.
We were talking about just before the show started, and yeah, the difference in your mood from the beginning of the year until now has to be pretty stark. If anybody's listening and has some time to go back and pull some clips from earlier in the year, maybe just go to the show where Allie predicted UF to go 12-0. That might be a good one. But
I did not predict UF to go 12-0.
You didn't predict them to go 12-0. You said they'd win every game. Okay, I get it.
No, what different. I said was that I thought they lost two. I just didn't think that either of those would be to Georgia. I thought one would be to Alabama and one would be one that we weren't expecting. But I wasn't going to predict Florida to lose because I don't like doing that. And that Florida had the ability, the capability to beat everyone on their schedule, which is still the case.
I don't think so. I don't think they had a capability to beat Georgia this year. So maybe anybody besides that. But I'll say, you said, you're right. You said that they would lose to somebody that was unexpected. And what ended up happening is they ended up proving that prediction right several
over
times.
And over
so
again.
You ended up being more right than you ever thought. Like you essentially nailed it.
That's usually what happens in my house. So I'm glad to see that, you know, my streak continues.
Hey, you went to Disney yesterday, another day where you don't invite me to go to Disney. But
I think everyone should know. TJ says, you never invite me to Disney. And I say, all right, well, we're going tomorrow. Do you want to go?
You can't tell somebody last second. No,
well, I don't have tickets and I don't. So I thought you had a pass the way that you said that to me. Like, you never invite me. Like, we go a lot because we have Disney passes. So we're just trying to take advantage of having them. We try and celebrate all the kids' birthdays like at some point by going on a day there. And on their actual day, I hate going on the weekends. I feel like it's just so crowded. And Eric had a conference during the week of their birthday. So he wasn't available to go. And I sure as hell am not taking four children to Disney alone. So here we were. We went yesterday. It poured like 90% of the time we were there, which is funny because I kept checking the weather and it said between like 15%, like was 2 days before. And then the day of it said 24% chance of rain. But it was for like a limited period of time. We're like, oh, that's perfect. Hopefully it happens. And then it will weed a few people out of the park. Like it literally poured
the whole time
from about 11 o'clock in the morning and it was still pouring by the time we left. So we were soaked. Hayden was crying by the end. He was like, I don't want any more rides. I just got to go home. I'm so cold. Because her clothes were soaked through. I didn't bring my children rain jackets because again, the percentage of rain was pretty small.
It's just Disney.
Right. Like, I don't know. I'm not one of those tourists that's going to have 87 ponchos in my bag and, you know, jackets for every type of weather.
It makes the kids cry.
I mean, yeah, toughen up. Life's too rough, babe.
So, you know who goes to Disney a lot is little Lily. I wish I was Melissa's kid.
Well, Melissa, they have a pass too.
Yeah, but they go like twice a week. I feel like she's posting on Instagram.
She's gone a lot the last few weeks. But truly, 9 times out of 10, they go with us.
The baby's finally old enough to where, like, you know, it's starting to be more fun. It's hard to take them when they're really small, but older now.
One-on-one, it's great. It's just Melissa and Lily. They can go for a couple hours, go home, or they'll go to Chef Mickey's or whatever. It's a little bit harder once you have more than one to plot by yourself.
Yeah, or four more than one, or three more than one for sure. Right. So, all right. So from bad weather on yesterday to bad football last Saturday, we'll start with you guys and then we'll go to us. Florida goes to South Carolina and just, you know, I don't even know what to say about this, but absolutely gets just whipped by South Carolina, loses 40-17. I was talking with, you know, not to pile on, but I'll pile on here. Not to, I won't say any names, but I was talking with somebody on the UF beat. And they were so shocked because this is like, South Carolina is bad, you know,
right?
But this is like a historically bad South Carolina, like bad on the levels of like pre-Spurrier South Carolina. Well, and so, you know, Florida went into this game with so much more talent, an absolute edge, what we would assume would be an edge on, you know, from a coaching perspective.
Standpoint, sure.
And man, you know, kind of can't, and you kind of like thought like, oh, they may kind of come out slow, but like had an early lead, you know, it was 7-3 UF near the end of the first quarter. And then it was even 10-10. At one point, but then from there, just the absolute wheels fall off. South Carolina goes on a 30-0 run, and then Florida scores late to make it look a little bit better, you know, at 40-17, if that is better. But Florida just looked absolutely awful in every facet of the game, from, you know, coaching to special teams to offense to defense. Like, there was nothing redeeming about what Florida did. Again, started the game okay. It was 10-10 at one point.
Right.
But then from there, the second and third quarter, the wheels just absolutely fell off. And much like the game the week before, a turnover, it was 20-13, and Florida had the ball, and you're kind of thinking like, okay, they score here, score to start the second half. They'll, you know, kind of be in good shape.
Sure.
A fumble return touchdown by South Carolina ends up pretty much putting the nail in the coffin at halftime. It was 30-10. And at that point, I think everybody kind of thought like, crap, we're about to lose again. So not a great display by Florida this weekend.
So I don't know that I think that there's a lot that I care to compare to between Florida and Georgia and Florida, South Carolina, outside of the fact that obviously turnovers were a huge factor in both games. I think the kind of performance Florida had against Georgia is far more excusable than the kind of performance they had against South Carolina.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, while I think that Florida did a lot to beat themselves against Georgia, I think I still believe had that last 2.5 minutes before halftime gone differently, that the game would have looked very different. I think the outcome potentially could have been different. Maybe it's not, but it's a lot closer. That loss doesn't bother me like this loss bothers me. This is a South Carolina team who, you're absolutely correct, doesn't have the same level of talent that Florida has, is supposed to not have the same level of coaching that Florida has. But the thing that I struggled with the most watching this is that I was watching people give up left and right. I really generally hesitate to comment on that because I personally despise the media, the fans that want to comment on the effort that they think they're seeing from guys when this is a job that they've never done, right? Like, it's very easy for a armchair quarterback to talk about what a player is doing wrong or the kind of effort that they're putting in or what's going on with them mentally. I think that's kind of a dangerous line to walk, and I don't generally like doing it. But when I, offensive linemen, literally blocking no one while people run by them, or I watch linebackers stop where they are in pursuit, or DBs give up on a route that ends up being caught, it's really hard as a fan, as an alumni, as someone that does know about football to fathom that. Now, I do think it's important to note how many people Florida was missing because of the flu. I was interested to see reports of that started to come out like right before kickoff, and it always, you know, is it real? Is that going to be used as an excuse after the game is over? Is it like, I always question those things. Supposedly it was very real, the number of players that Florida left. I do think that potentially can explain some of the collapse in the second half, because it, you know, if you've ever had the flu that week, by the end of a 60-minute game, you are spent, you're done.
That said, let me jump in. The second half, South Carolina outscored Florida 10-7. So here'd be my question on that is, some of those reports started coming out that morning.
Yeah.
For Florida State, that they would be missing 20 to 25 guys. Yeah. And they were missing quite a few guys.
Yeah.
But they were only missing five guys on the two deep. So on the first two. So a lot of the guys.
I don't know.
I would love to know what that number was for Florida.
Yeah. And I don't know, right? I don't know the answer.
Did it seem like, just from the box score, Emory played, Pierce played, Malik Davis played, Copeland played, Naquan Wright played, Shorter played.
Emory tested positive for the flu the morning of the game. Anthony Richardson hurt his knee. Which, honest to God, if I'm Dan Mullen, I don't know that I ever let this story see the light of day, because mixed with all of the other things going on.
I'm going to get fired by letting that story out.
Just
pay me the buyout money. Like, I'm going to go ahead and – why would you ever tell the story like that? Like,
so, just, but Anthony,
he lies all the time. Just lie.
The story is that Richardson was cleared on Thursday, practiced a little bit, hurt his knee dancing in the team hotel on Friday. Now, I'm not saying college kids shouldn't have fun. I'm not saying you shouldn't have a loose and light, you know, Friday before a game or whatever, but he's not available, not because of the concussion protocol that has kept him out, you know, the days before, but because he injured his knee dancing, which is why Emory, who did test positive for the flu that morning, had to play. I don't know that I saw such a huge difference in Emory's performance between Saturday and the previous Saturdays to be like, oh yeah, I could tell he had the flu, but it doesn't help. Right. And I don't know which of our guys tested positive, which missed practice, which didn't. I will just tell you, I would love to have been in the locker room this past week to see what I don't. Did players give up? Maybe. I don't know. Was the flu that big of a factor? Maybe. It seemed like a very different team. There seemed like very little fight. It seemed like a lot of people gave up. That was disheartening for me to see, because it's the first time this season that I've really felt that I've really felt like there was a lack of effort. Now, not running the right route, not reading the defense correctly, not whatever. Those are all problems, but I don't know that they're necessarily an effort problem. Yeah. What I saw on Saturday was an effort problem. It was a lack of fire, a lack of enthusiasm, a lack of caring. And that is dangerous, right? That's a problem. That's absolutely way more of a problem than any of the previous problems that I think that this team has been dealing with.
So yeah, a couple of points there. You're absolutely right. It's a massive problem because there's probably a lot of factors to it.
I think there's a lot of things going on.
One is when you have built up your entire season around one game and trying to win that one game the weekend of Halloween, and you get absolutely beat down in that one. And then it's like, what did UF, I mean, there's pride and the school colors and all, but what did UF really have to play for this weekend? Right? Like,
not a lot. Like, I don't think, I disagree that Florida builds their whole season around Georgia. I think fans do.
Yeah,
I don't think that that's how it's coached in the locker room. I don't. It's never been the way that it's been coached.
Well, I don't know. Then how do you explain? I don't know. I'm just trying to offer slight possibilities for why. Wow. Because with the flu and everything else, Florida was much, much more talented than South Carolina.
Absolutely. And listen,
they didn't lose like on a fluky play, like a blocked field goal.
Sure. They got soundly beaten.
And guys,
quitting. I am a hungrier South Carolina team. Absolutely. Yeah,
and so guys, whether or not, and everything else, like, I think there's an absolute letdown. And I'm not saying maybe not completely built around beating Georgia, but everyone in that locker room knows that that is the biggest game on the schedule every year. That's the game. And so once you lose that one, what is the motivation left? Right? Yeah. Like, what is the motivation to get up? And so I'm not saying that UF coaches complete, like, it's this game and all. Like, we can go 1-11 as long as we win this. So let me take it back just a little bit. But there's definitely hype around that game. And once you lose that one, And once you can't get to Atlanta and
the door is now closed on all of your goals. So at that point, you are playing for pride. You're playing for each other. And that's very different than playing for these long-term goals that they had for themselves, that other fans had for them, and things at the end of the season.
And what I'll say is the Florida is a much more talented team than South Carolina. And they're a much more talented team than Florida State is. And Florida State has had every, and we'll get into the Florida State game here in a minute. And I guess I'm about to play the moral victory thing here, but Florida State didn't go out and quit against North Carolina State, and they've got less wins than Florida. And they've been a bigger dumpster fire for years and years and years. And they're playing a ranked team. And Florida State was playing without their starting quarterback. And I know the controversy between Emory and Richardson, but the drop off is negligible, if anything, this year. Like, they've had very comparable seasons. And so what it looked like, and obviously we'll get to some changes and things that have gone on at Florida a little later in the show, but when you see a Florida State team that went through the same stuff with the flu, the same stuff with being a bad team, even worse stuff with losing your starting quarterback, playing a better team. NC State is objectively better than South Carolina. Like, there's like, nobody's going to question that. Playing a ranked team as opposed to a team that is historically bad, it looks like guys are still bought in with Norvell and they weren't on Saturday with Mullen.
Now, The outcome was the same. They both lost.
Absolutely. But would you rather see your guys quit during the game or keep fighting?
No, and have it.
So, and that's what I'm saying. It looked on Saturday. And I'm not saying that the next three games are going to look like this. I don't know. But it looked on Saturday like Norvell's team is still bought in and Mullen's team
wasn't. Yeah. And I'm not arguing that. I think I just think it's important to note that the outcome is the same. I don't like what I saw on Saturday. I, sat next to Eric, who really didn't like what he saw on Saturday. And I was really interested to see where we go from here. I actually said to Scott, my brother, who you're friends with, on Sunday, I was like, listen, we got to get rid of Grantham and we got to get rid of Hevesy today. And he was like,
I said Hevesy earlier this year and you told me that he wasn't a bad coach. I just want to.
Well, and I don't think Hevesy's a bad coach, but what I saw out of the offensive line on Saturday was so disconcerting to me that I don't know where you go with him as your coach right now because of what that looked like. And add in the fact that he is not considered a great recruiter by any stretch of the imagination. I don't know the positive, but the interesting thing that Scott said was like, oh man, no way. You do not fire your offensive line coach in the middle of the season. You got to wait till the end of the season. He's like, coordinator is an easy position to fill in. You have multiple position coaches on defense that you just have step up to be defensive coordinator. Offensive line is a totally different ball game. He's like, the only way that happens is if you're completely desperate, because then a grad assistant ends up as your interim coach for the rest of the season. And he's like, and Lord knows that's probably not better. And then that's literally exactly what happened, which was interesting. And, Scott played half of his time at Florida on offense and half on defense. So he's got a kind of an interesting perspective because he sat in the meeting rooms literally for both sides of the ball. And he was really surprised at the move. But I think, and I had been told by somebody pretty high up within the program 3 weeks ago that Grantham was for sure going to be gone by the end of the year, that like Grantham knew that was the case. So if what Mullen said was true, that some of these things were going to be happening eventually, I think he probably knew Hevesy was going to be gone, but he wanted to handle it at the end of the season. And I think that this loss forced his hand because it really did become kind of them or me, right? There, something drastic had to happen.
Yeah. It was reported on Sunday morning on like the message boards and stuff like that. I don't know if it was Gator Country, the Rivals on the 247, whatever, but it was reported that, Strickland and Mullen got into it pretty good
in the tunnel. Yeah.
And the conversation was, it's them or you. Like,
you,
basically not them or you. I'm sorry. You need to make changes or we will.
Right. You know, and I did
in that report.
And somebody told me about what they read on 24/7. I talked to Eric about it and he was like, I mean, it would be really out of, he's like, I don't understand why they'd have that conversation in the tunnel instead of having that conversation on the plane they're about to get back on or in the locker room or whatever. So I do find, like, I'm not saying that that didn't happen by any means. I just think it's interesting that it would happen there versus all of the other places privately that it could happen. But I think these were two good moves, right? I think in the press conferences that Mullen has done since then, he seems lighter. And so that does make me think that there's a possibility that he thought that these were changes that needed to happen all along, but his loyalties and personal relationships did weigh heavy on him. He is known as an incredibly loyal guy. Prior to this, he's fired one assistant in his entire career as a head coach. People do like to work for him. He is very loyal to them, but it was a situation where Mullen needed to do something to prove that he was still all in, that he acknowledged that this isn't acceptable and acknowledged that there has to be big changes in order to turn this around. Now, I will be interested to see what other changes come, right? I'm interested to see how Florida plays on Saturday. I'm glad that Grantham is gone, especially because now there's been some reports that have come out that he has really made it a toxic work environment there. I don't know whether or not that's true or not. That's just some of the stories that have kind of been leaked out. It's not something that I personally heard while, you know, the season was going on or previous seasons or anything like that. But that is, you know, kind of the reports now. I don't really know how much you can change outside of getting players that maybe weren't bought in with Grantham to buy in with Christian Robinson. I don't know that in a week we're going to see anything drastically different. If I'm Robinson, the thing that I concentrate on is fundamentals. You're not installing a new scheme at this point. You can make tweaks, but you're not overhauling anything in the next 3 weeks. But the thing that you do have control over are things like tackling, being in position, things that Florida hasn't been doing that really should be where your defense starts, right? So I hope Gator fans aren't expecting to see like this entirely new team, because I just don't know how that's possible in 6 days. But I think if we see fight and fire, that's a sign of improvement.
Yeah, it'd be good to see guys that don't quit in the middle
right,
of the game.
Right, right. And
because – you know, you're playing another bad team.
Sure, sure. But, a team that you're so far overmatched about, but yeah. Effort is effort, right? And
yeah, and how do you get up for Samford, right? Like, they're going to beat Samford. Samford's really, really bad. This is not like a Jacksonville State team or somebody that, like, could upset. Like, Samford's really, really bad, not, like, on that tier at all. But how do you get up for it, right? Like, do you get – I mean, are they going to win the game – 35-17, you know, just underwhelm. There's not even a line for this game. Like, that's how big, like, that's how big of a favorite Florida is. Like, there's not even a line set. It's not even like a 41 point line or something crazy like that. But then the next 2 weeks, they have to play a Missouri team, which is favored against South Carolina, who just beat the hell out
and
of
them. And has a really, really talented running back. And Florida's been struggling against the run.
And then they have to play a Florida State team that, again, I think there's I said last week I thought Florida would beat Florida State by 2 touchdowns. I might put that down to 1 by now, just seeing what Florida did last week. But I still think Florida's better than Florida State. But if they go out and lay an egg against Missouri and lose that game, I think I think the team will completely quit.
I don't think that the talent gap is big enough between Florida and Florida State for effort to not be a factor in that game, right? No, so if Florida quits,
what is Florida State's biggest strength? Is their running game?
Well, and let's be honest. If Florida State beats Florida, it makes their season. It doesn't matter what else has happened. If this particular Florida State team figures out a way to beat Florida, their season has become incredibly successful.
They're still going to be under 500, so I wouldn't call it incredibly successful. Like, I'll disagree with that wholeheartedly.
You don't think Florida State fans would have a totally different outcome on this season if they figure out a way to beat Florida?
I think that some of it is the fact of realizing where Florida is. Like, beating Clemson would have been nice, but then also realizing this is the worst Clemson team, you know, since 2010. puts perspective on things. Like, sure. If Florida was 11-1 or 10-1 going into that game and you beat them, that's one thing. But like, yeah. Florida's an absolute dumpster fire too. I mean, Florida's 4-5 right now. They have one more win than Florida State. You know, like, will fans of either team enjoy winning? Yes.
Yeah.
That's not my point. But I don't think it makes the season a success.
Yeah.
Like, you're still missing a bowl. You still lost more than you won. You still had an inexplicable loss. I think what that game will, and we'll talk about it more as we get a little closer. I think what that game is going to come down to is whether or not Jordan Travis plays. You know,
yeah.
Florida State has won. Interesting stat. Florida State has won 6 games over the last 2 years. Jordan Travis was they won 7 games. Jordan Travis was the starter in all six of them.
Interesting.
And in the 7th one, he came in off the bench and won
interesting.
That last year. So Florida State's record this year with Jordan Travis starting is 3-3. Those 3 losses being to Clemson, Notre Dame, NC State, 2 ranked teams and a team that was still much better than you, even though they're not ranked.
Right.
So if Travis plays, I think Florida State will be in it. If he doesn't, I think Florida will win by like 10. You know, like I just don't think Florida's off. I think Florida's offense right now. I mean, Grantham gets so much heat and Grantham gets so much blame. And we've talked about this all year. But for Mullen to go out and really only put up, 10 points against South Carolina, 7 late to make it look a little better. The offense is an absolute dumpster fire as well. Like, it's not like, oh man, the defense is terrible and cost us this game, when the offense is really, really bad too. And
yeah,
that's kind of what it comes down to is, last year, Florida State played, the defense was no good, and Florida State may have put up a touchdown or two. But this year, like, Florida's offense doesn't scare anybody, except for maybe its own fans. You know, I don't think Florida's going to run up the score on Florida State. You know, I just don't think they have an offense built to do that.
I don't know. I don't know where the offense went that scored as many points as they did against Alabama. I think that Florida has the capacity. They've done it this season. I don't know. I mean, but
against,
this is a Florida team
bad
that's on
teams mostly.
But not, I mean, but Alabama's not a bad team.
What'd you guys score against Alabama?
Like 35.
Was it 35?
I don't know. I got to Google now. It's been too long.
I think you're making stuff up. I think it was like,
let's see.
It was 29.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's not bad, right? Like that is not bad against the defense that Alabama puts up. I think that Florida is capable of scoring points.
I think that a little bit worse this year, but I agree with that.
But they're not worse than Florida State's, you know, like they're not, they're, I would, Florida's offense has declined. It's interesting because it's not like there's any key pieces that are missing. So it's hard to figure out exactly what the decline is. I would like to see the Pierce get more carries. Pierce is averaging like 7 yards a touch or something crazy like that, but he's seeing the ball 6 or 7 times a game. I would like to, instead of running back by committee, I would love for him to get the majority of those touches. I think that that helps. I think that he is always good for positive yardage when he touches the ball. I just think Florida's problems, in my opinion, are not something that are fixed in a week or in 3 weeks. Florida needs a culture change. And if I'm Dan Mullen, the coach that I get rid of, and I hesitate to say this because he's gotten great reviews, you know, the 4 years that he's been here with Mullen. I know that our players like him. If I'm Dan Mullen, the coach that I am most concerned about replacing is Savage, the strength and conditioning coach. Discipline starts with your strength and conditioning program. This coach is the captain of your ship for 7.5 months out of the year. He is the second most important coach outside of your head coach. And whether or not this is actually his fault or not, replacing him is the easiest way to get immediate culture change. It would be very difficult for Savage to all of a sudden come in tomorrow and say, all right, we got a totally different game plan. I've got a totally different attitude. We're doing everything completely different. We have no discipline. We're starting over from scratch. The guys are used to him and whatever way he coaches, just as he is. You could bring in a new strength and conditioning coach who's never met these players, and that attitude can completely change. And I think that's what he has to do. I think this is bigger than replacing any one position coach or coordinator. This is a team that is not particularly disciplined. I don't know that they know that they're not disciplined. I'm not saying like they're, these are not guys that are like throwing a shoe, you know, or things like that. Like they're not doing things that are blatantly disrespectful or things like that. But Urban Meyer used to have a saying where he would say, give me 4 to 6 seconds of relentless effort. And he would say that about each play. If you can give me 4 to 6 seconds of relentless effort, we will win this ball game. And that is how he would break down a game to players, is 4 to 6 seconds of relentless effort. And when I watched on Saturday, there were very few people that I saw doing that. And
supposedly Anthony Richardson did that on Friday night. He gave up 4 to 5, and that's how he broke his leg.
Well,
I heard he
break his leg.
I was thinking of breaking.
But and you know, there have been little signs throughout the season that have made me think this. I think we've talked about it on a previous pod. You know, that viral video of Florida specialists pretending that they're a human, like stationary bike on the sidelines and things like that. If you think
kids having fun,
if you think that flies in on Saban's sideline, please, they would be sacrificed at halftime in the locker room. If you think that would fly on Kirby's sidelines, if you think that would fly on Dabo's sidelines, like if you think that would have flown on Muschamp's sidelines, it wouldn't have. Those are not, Meyer would have, so his head would have exploded.
So you think that Dan hiring a new strength and conditioning coach will help him get better discipline on the team? Because obviously that's an issue right now.
Yes. So your discipline starts with your strength coach. Your toughness, both mentally and physically, come from your strength coach. Dan can dictate the playbook from the top, but that strength and conditioning coach is the one coach on this field that has control of these players for the longest. There's a massive period of time over the summer where he's the only coach these players see. And we are not looking at tough players. We are not looking at, you know, guys that have this massive will and desire to maul the guy across the line from them. And all of that comes from your strength and conditioning. So I know that, you know, players love to post all these pictures of them when they came in and what they looked like with their shirt off and then what they look like after they've been in Savage's program for a year and stuff. And I am in no way debating that he has helped them make major physical changes. But this is not a disciplined or a tough team. So whether or not this is actually Savage's problem, and it might not be his fault, right? It might not be his fault at all. But the quickest way to make a change is with your strength and conditioning coach. So maybe it's that he's getting sacrificed and this is not actually his deal. But the very easiest way for a culture change is your strength and conditioning coach. And
or your head coach.
I mean, but then your head coach, every coach is getting replaced right under there too.
I just want to know how much of this is Mullen's fault and how much is Savage's. Because it seems to be, you know,
well, Mullen's the CEO, right? Like at the end of the day, everything falls on your head coach. Your head coach, and same thing as your quarterback. They get too much praise when you win and too much blame when you lose. But that's your job when you are the man in charge. I'm not trying to take blame away from Mullen. What I'm trying to say is in my opinion, the best and quickest way to fix the problem while keeping Dan as the head coach, which is what the powers that be want to happen right now, right? If Strickland was planning on firing Dan Mullen, they don't fire our offensive line and our defensive coordinator 3 weeks left in the season. There's no point. They wait for those 3 weeks to be over. They clean house. They let the new staff bring in whoever they want. There is zero reason.
Do you think that if they lose to Missouri and Florida State, Mullen gets fired?
I think that I think it's a possibility. I think if they lose to Samford, he for sure is out. 100%. Yeah. He's
but
gone.
I don't think they lose to Samford.
I don't think they do either.
I think you just run up and run like a dive every play and they'll beat Samford.
I think it depends on what you see, right? I think in my mind, if Florida puts out full effort, I don't see how you could possibly lose to Missouri or Florida State. So I preface that with what I'm about to say. But I think it depends on how they lose, if they were to lose to both of those. If they're in dogfights that they fully participate and seem engaged in, I think that is different. I agree with that. But I'm telling you how I think they keep him versus firing him. But I think that it's hard to keep him if you lose those two games. I think that it's this administration's goal and vision that they do keep him. I think that Dan has more time. I talked to somebody who, I don't even know how to say this without, somebody that would know. And they essentially told me that they want this to work with Mullen, which is part of these assistant firings now. And so it would have to depend on how it played out. I hope that's not how it plays out. I hope that's not how it happens. I do think it's important for Gator fans to realize you're not going to see a completely different team in the next 3 weeks. That would be awesome, but our players are still who our players are. Our system is what our system is. And so if for a major change to happen, that's going to happen in the offseason. Hopefully enough change happens that they get out of these three games and we move on.
Yeah. The road doesn't get much easier, as we've kind of talked about in the past. We mentioned the Utah game to start the year last year, and I kind of was crapping on Utah a little bit, and then they went out. But
Utah's good, yeah.
Yeah, Utah actually looked really good last week. And so, you talked about earlier in the show that to start the year this year, you thought Florida had the propensity or the ability to beat every team on the schedule. I'd agree with that, except for Georgia. But, next year, I think they've got the propensity to lose to almost any team on the schedule. I think the Utah game is going to be tough. I think Kentucky's trending the right way. I think Tennessee's trending the right way.
Tennessee is absolutely trending the right way.
Play Eastern Washington and USF. I mean, that's a couple of wins. But Missouri, I think that's a win too, back at home. But then you've got LSU, you play Georgia, you play at Texas A&M, you play a South Carolina team that beat your brains in. Obviously, you're going to beat Vandy. And then you have to go to Doak. And so
right. You
could be looking at another 8-4 season next year, which obviously you'd take 8-4 this year because you can't get there. But interesting to see for sure. And, it feels like and not to say that Mullen cannot turn it around. But typically when you see a drop off in college football, you don't see coaches be up, go up, and drop off, and then somehow like resurrect their own program. Usually,
Brian
you don't.
Kelly did it.
Yeah, and so it's happened. Can you think of many other examples? Or I don't think there's a ton. I think it's I think it's fairly rare.
So is Dabo on his way out?
I don't know. That's an interesting one. They definitely have fallen off much harder than anyone would have thought that they would. But comparing Dabo and Mullen, Dabo who has
I'm not multiple, comparing Dabo yeah. and Mullen. You just comparing, asked for examples. I'm trying
comparing
to.
Comparing their – yeah, well, I'm looking for examples of teams that have built it back up, right? Like after watching it fall, like Bowden couldn't do it. Meyer saw the writing on the wall. It's like, I'm out of here too. It's hard to – once you slip and somebody else kind of jumps in front of you, Richt couldn't do it. It's very hard to build it back up. Not impossible. Not saying that Mullen can't do it.
Rick was consistently mediocre basically the entire time. There was no like rise and fall for him. He just was a perennial 10-2. And eventually that wasn't enough for Georgia. And it was hard because they loved him and he was a great person. So it's very difficult to justify firing a perennial 10-2 coach because it's very hard to find someone that bests that. And I mean, I don't know that I think
Orgeron couldn't do it, got up, down. I'm trying to think of like other coaches, that have rebuilt their own program once they've slipped.
Yeah. To be fair, I don't know that Orgeron has had, I think that his firing had a lot to do with a lot of off the field things as well. So I don't know if given the time, if he would come back or not, but
probably, but winning fixes everything.
Yeah, for sure. But it's been 2 years since they've won a national title. So most of the time your coach that won a national title 2 years ago, regardless of what your record shows, they're not getting fired. So that was influenced by outside stuff. So I don't know that it's fair to lump him into the same category. He's not getting the opportunity to see if they could rise. So he fits into that technically, but
it's very rare, right? Is what I'm saying. It's very hard for a coach to,
this is what I will say.
If Florida after a slip, because now you're seeing all that, which I don't believe in momentum during games. We can talk about that later. But I do think recruiting momentum is real. And now you're seeing like a kid just decommitted this morning. Kids are jumping off the ship. Kids are saying they're transferring stuff. So like now,
nobody said they've transferred. Not a single person has announced that they've transferred. That's not true.
Okay.
Not a single player has said they're transferring. They have lost recruits. And honestly, if
there's
I'm a recruit's parent,
going on behind the scenes that I want to talk about then.
Okay. Well, and it's definitely not anything I've heard, I will say. So But if you're a recruit, I understand it. Wow.
No, I'm saying that, and that's why I'm saying it's so hard to do it. Because now, you know, do you think Florida's recruiting class is going to be, and this is the reason why. Do you think Florida's recruiting class, we've already talked about Mullen's struggles in recruiting, but do you think they're going to be better or worse now that they're essentially fighting for a bowl game, right?
They're going to be worse, but they're worse less about the bowl game and more about the uncertainty, right? And if I'm a recruit's parent, that's a concern for me too, because I want to know who my kids are playing for and what system they run, because whether or not do they fit into it.
Right. I don't care what the reasoning is. Recruiting class is going to be worse. How are you closing the gap now with Alabama?
Right. Georgia? No, and that's
why it's hard. And so all that said, that's why it's hard for, and now like Mullen's gotten his mulligan, right? He's gotten to fire Grant, that like he's made staff changes. They will never come to him again and say, okay, time for you to make staff. So like
change that's has why, to happen. But I think
that's why it's so razor thin and why it's nearly impossible for once a team has slipped, once you've lost that recruiting momentum, like Florida, like the gap between it's almost like, and I'm not predicting the same thing is going to happen. I'm not saying that Florida is going to get this low, because I do think Dan's floor is so much higher, but it's just like what's happened with Florida State and Clemson. Like the gap is widening every single year. Okay. And what does Florida do to get that gap closer to Georgia? Now, what I think Florida can do is get back on the right track with beating Kentucky again, beating South Carolina again, beating Tennessee, beating those teams. But, like, how long does Mullen have now to get that gap closer to Georgia?
So, All right. So, a couple things about that. First of all, I think that with the struggles that have gone on, this recruiting class was shot whether they fire Mullen tomorrow or at the end of the season or they retain him to next year. With the December signing class, it makes it incredibly difficult for a program that's not – you know, that's kind of wandering in their path, right? Because if they hire a new person, it's too late for him to get guys in by that December deadline. If they keep Mullen, but players weren't sure what was going to happen or if he was going to be there around or not, there was going to be decommitments. And this class is not going to be great. By keeping Mullen, if they decide to keep Mullen, they're going to give him another year or two to see if the changes that he made play out. Because otherwise, there's no reason to let him make the changes to begin with. It doesn't make sense to make the change, but not see whether that change has any effect on the outcome. I will say this about Mullen's recruiting. I do think it could be better. I want it to be better. I'm not debating that in any way. It bothers me when people say things like Mullen is such a horrible recruiter. When we look at the last two signing classes, they were 7 and 8. It's not great. I don't want to be in the top 10. I want to be in the top 5. I'm in no way saying 7 or 8 is the peak or it's acceptable, but 7 or 8 is not a horrible recruiter. That is a top 10 recruiting class. So
Just to interject, I think some of the concern around that is like the hit rate on stuff, like guys that just haven't panned out, like a little deeper than just the recruiting rankings, like what the final number was.
But it's not like Mullen is picking guys that no one else wants.
It's guys that never see the field. It's guys that don't pan out. It's guys that end up transferring or don't have the grades. So I think that's kind of more of the complaint. I'm not saying that the final number wasn't good. I think that's where more people's complaints come in.
The grades are hard. Florida has a higher standard than the NCAA minimum. And you can't necessarily predict how these guys are going to finish. And there are guys that do not academically qualify at Florida.
When you're recruiting them.
Well, you know what they are currently, sure. But they'll most of them have an entire last semester to close things out. But there also are players that Alabama and Georgia and Clemson and other places take that Florida won't. And I'm not saying Florida's Harvard and that they only, you know, take straight A students, but it is a fact that Florida has higher academic standards than the NCAA minimum. So, and Florida hasn't had a crazy transfer rate. They've had a few here and there, but they do not have a large transfer rate by any means. I think it's fair to say some of these players haven't panned out, but Florida doesn't get a 7 or 8 ranking by signing guys that other people have zero interest in. So it's a crapshoot. Recruiting is a crapshoot. That's how this works out. I think it should be better.
Georgia and Alabama.
Well, when you get to completely handpick every single person that comes through there, that is the luxury of that. I want that to be Florida. I hope they get there. I think that one of the biggest things for Mullen is to hire recruiters.
I think you're agreeing with me. just in the fact that the recruiting is going to get worse. And so the gap between Florida and the elite schools is going to get wider, at least this year. We'll see what happens next year in the 2023 cycle.
And I think that's a fair statement. This is not going to be a good signing class. There's not a whole lot that can be done, whether you kept or fired Mullen, to salvage what's going on right now.
So that's what kind of tends me to believe, tends to make me believe that it would be very, very difficult for Mullen to turn this around. Because now the talent gap is going to be even wider. And we don't know who the DC is going to be. Is he going to make a good hire this time? Is he going to hire a retread? You know, we have no clue.
I don't know. I think it'll be interesting to see. So I think that hiring guys that are surefire recruiters is important. I know we've heard the name Doug Belk thrown around a lot. Interestingly, Doug Belk, who is the defensive coordinator currently for Houston, he played with my brother-in-law. He played with Nick, TJ, at Carson Newman. And he's from South Georgia. I think it's an interesting name. Supposedly a very good recruiter. Has got good South Georgia ties, which is helpful as well. It's an interesting one. Gene Chizik is one that a few different people have bounced off me. I think that he's a Gator, so that's cool. I think he's a great coach. He has head coach experience. I think it's interesting. I would love to see Florida go young because I think that that's important for reaching these players. But these hires are important, right? This will make or break whether or not Mullen stays Florida's head coach. But I will tell you this much. I fully believe that if Florida were to fire Dan Mullen this year, they will be in the identical situation 4 years from now. And then we will have been looking at 20 years of Florida firing and hiring a coach every 3 to 4 years. And I don't think that that is a good pattern to be in. I would rather stick with someone and see if it can work out.
And that's exactly what Georgia did for all the years that Rick was there, right? They used that same logic. And I'm not saying you're wrong, because obviously the chance exists that it works out. But if you're in the same exact spot in 4 years after giving Mullen his chance to rebuild it or get it back to where you want it to be or whatever the expectation
is. I don't know that I think 4 years is enough time for that, though. I think that's the world we live in right now for college football. I mean,
whatever the time frame. I don't care what the time frame is. However long Mullen is here, whether it's 10 years and he wins two titles and we can look back and say, like, look, Allie was right, he rebuilt it, or it's three more years and then they end up firing him then because you guys win between 8 and 11 games for the next 3 years and whatever the end it ends up being. But that's the exact logic that kept Rick around, was we're so close. And after that time, they all said, man, we wish we would have made this change.
But I also think that Georgia's change was strategic, right? I think that when it became abundantly clear that a Georgia alumni up and coming, but that makes a difference. If there was somebody out there.
I'm talking about Florida. Florida's situation is this. They will either fire Mullen in the next year or so. Like next year they go 7-5, they're firing him. Like he's out. But they are either going to fire Mullen or keep him. And if they keep him and it works out,
the only two options.
Right. If you're saying right now that you don't want to be in the same position in 4 years, but because you had a new coach, what if you're in the same position?
No, I'm not saying I don't want to be. I'm saying we will be.
Okay.
Florida will be in this same situation in 4 years.
And there's also the possibility that you keep Mullen and you're in the same position in 4 years, right?
I prefer that.
And so then you'd be 4 years down the road and have no chance of getting, you know what I'm saying? Then you restart.
Whether you restart this year or you restart in 4 years or 10 years or whatever. But with Georgia, that move was strategic. They watched Kirby coming up. They watched what he did at Alabama. They knew he was ready. They knew he was a Georgia alum. It made sense. That is very similar to what Florida did with Ron Zook. We had a new school president who used to be the president of Utah, had experience with Urban Meyer, knew him personally, knew he would have interest in the job. It wasn't actually a massive risk when they let go of Ron Zook on that plane after they lost to Mississippi State and replaced him with Urban Meyer 3 weeks later, because it was something that they already could see coming. There is not someone in college football today that I could name that I think would be a more successful replacement for Mullen from the gate. When Florida did it with Meyer, they knew ahead of time. When Georgia did it with Kirby, they knew ahead of time. When Florida had no plan, we ended up with Muschamp and McElwain. And honestly, McElwain was a worse hire by far than Muschamp was. So I don't indiscriminately firing your coach without a plan that you at least are pretty confident in working when you have a top 10 coach is illogical.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I want them to keep Mullen for as long as possible. You know, like the, I'm completely on board with you on that. I don't think they should. I mean, I think that, you know, you've watched a Florida team. You've watched, I know that you're going to hate this, but Florida won 10 and 11 games with McElwain's players. And now we've got UF's players in here, and you can
blame that's like Mullen. Meyer did it with Zook's players. McElwain was a better recruiter than he was coach.
Yeah.
And Ron so Zook now, was a better recruiter so than he was coach.
Now you're seeing the talent dwindle. And like Kirby said in his little recruiting snippet, it's not about coaching. It's about recruiting in this game. Do you think right. Kirby's a good coach?
Not particularly.
I think he's an okay coach.
I think he's a better fundamentals coach, practice coach. I don't think he's a wonderful game day coach. So I don't want to say I don't think he's a good coach. I think he's a good Monday through Friday coach.
I think he's a fine. I think he's an average to about average coach. But he's an elite recruiter, you know?
Correct. And so, which is wild. But those money bags that Georgia gives out, I guess, are helpful because that swoop hair is not turning anybody by itself.
You know, so I don't know. I do think that Florida should, and I'm not saying necessarily this year, but I, you know, if it's going to happen eventually, it should just happen now, you know, and I think that I just don't think Mullen is, I don't think he's ever going to close the gap with Georgia. Right. Like, and so if that's kind of your standard, right. If
you beat Georgia last year. Beat Georgia last year. You can't tell me that this year's all Mullen's players and last year's all McElwain's players. It didn't transfer over Trask just like there. That. That's, I mean, yes, Trask was, but Trask nobody wanted, right?
Who was the difference in that game? It doesn't matter who wanted him or not. He was the difference. I mean, he was a freaking Heisman candidate that went in the first round.
Yeah, he was great. Florida had a lot of great talent that was not performing like this when they didn't have Mullen as their coach.
And so now
you think that if McElwain coaches that team, they beat Georgia?
No, I don't.
Right.
But now that we've got Mullen's players, I don't know if he ever beats Georgia again.
So get a few good recruiters or elite recruiters on your staff and let's go.
So what I'm interested to see, and somebody brought up a great point with this, is the how much – so we just talked about this. Like Mullen's out of mulligans. Sounds funny to say back-to-back. But, like, they're not going to come to him in 2 years if this similar thing is happening. Be like, got to fire the coordinators again. So that we
I
can
would move. Say that's a like, fair statement, yeah.
So, like, he's out of mulligans, right? Like, this is sure. – this it's on him now. Like, it's easy to right. have Grantham and Hevesy and – mm-hmm. Savage or just whomever else fall on the sword, mm-hmm. but the sure. sword to fall on next will be Mullen's. And
sure.
so if you're a, somebody brought this up again, Gators beat, whether it was Dave or Nick or just Thomas Goldkamp or somebody, brought up the fact of like, it's going to be more difficult for Florida to hire because mm-hmm. coaches know that, like defensive coordinators right. know that. And so do I want to go into a place where I know that this is this coach's last string? Right. Like, do I want to go get, because like you said, there's even uncertainty around, I think Florida wins out. Right.
Right.
Wouldn't shock me if they lose either of the last two games, but I do think Florida wins out. There's uncertainty around Mullen's job this year.
If they don't I don't think they make any hires until the season's over. You're not making a hire right before the Florida State game and then losing that and getting fired. That would
correct. No. But that, and so my point is, but the same thing is going to exist next year. If Florida goes 6-6 next year, do you want to be the DC that takes the job?
I mean,
and then that's your last, you know, it would have been much easier to hire a DC 2 years ago. Like
when
Mullen shouldn't. So I think it will be tougher to make a hire. Mullen needs to hit a home run on this hire. And I don't think you hit a home run with a retread, like the old guys that we were talking about that can't relate to these kids anymore. I think you need a new up and coming guy. And a new up-and-coming guy is a risk every time.
It is.
Is this going to work or not? And so I think that's going to make it pretty tough on UF as well.
Well, you know, here's the thing. Money talks. Florida has a lot of it. And with Grantham's contract up, they have a lot of money. They were paying him a lot of money as Florida's defensive coordinator. I do think you go after a young and up-and-coming guy because let's take Belk, for example. The defensive coordinator from Houston – jumps at the opportunity to be the defensive coordinator at Florida, even if it's for just 1 year, in my opinion. Much bigger stage, much more money. Your next job after Florida, even if you get fired after a year, isn't going to be back at Houston. it's going to be another SEC, ACC, you know, Big Ten school. That is still a advancement of career for somebody like that, regardless of whether or not Mullen is there. But I agree with what you're saying. It's harder to hire when you don't have the stability. I hope that Strickland will be a part of this process. I hope, I'm kind of disappointed that Florida has not heard anything from him publicly for the last month in support of Mullen, because I do think that that's important.
They've heard from him in the last month since
they haven't
basketball stuff.
They haven't.
He's been hiding from that.
They haven't. And I think the hiding truly has far more to do with that than it has anything to do with Mullen. But I think it's unfortunate that they coincided, because I really do think had he come out right away and stood up in defense of Mullen, that people would have quieted down a little bit. It wouldn't have necessarily changed everything, but I can't tell you how many Gator fans told me, well, you know, Strickland's totally still deciding. He hasn't said anything. So we need to make sure that he knows how we feel. And I feel like that this made it even harder on Mullen unnecessarily, because Strickland's hiding out potentially over the women's basketball stuff. But I hope that he will be involved in this process and give some sort of vote of confidence, at least to the final candidates that will be interviewed. But you're right. It's a hard sell, but it's still Florida. They're about to open a bajillion-dollar standalone football facility. They're in the most talent-rich state in the entire country. They have a lot of money at their disposal. I don't think it's an impossible hire. This isn't USF trying to hire a defensive coordinator, you know, Charlie Strong's last year or something like that. This is still the University of Florida. They'll get someone. Mullen is incredibly important for Mullen to make the right hire. And it is hard. And I do think that a young guy is the right fit, but you're right. It's a crapshoot.
Yeah.
It's harder than it could be, for sure. It's harder than it could have been. I think that that's true. But I honestly think that there's also probably a part of coaches that will admire the loyalty.
But they know
I'm interested to see who they get.
They know they're not getting fired by the head coach. They're getting fired by the AD in a year or two. So it will be interesting to see like what UF can kind of do down the stretch. Obviously, we expect them to win pretty big on Saturday. But it'll be interesting to see their effort level. How much do they, you know, how much do they care? They had a tough time getting up for a South Carolina game on the road, fun environment. You know, and show up this weekend for a noon kick? I don't know exactly what time the Samford game is, but for a game that very little people care about, and I can't imagine the kids care about it either. How do you get up for it? Do you kind of take the, you know, we wondered this about, you know, FSU as well, when they've had bad losses and stuff, how would they get up for it? I mean, Florida State did a good job of going out and beating UMass's brains in and playing well in that game. And that's really what UF needs this weekend. And then, you know, to kind of pray like heck to win the last two and try and make a bowl game. Florida State played NC State. We took a whole hour on the Gators just because of their calamity, their catastrophe.
I feel good though. Got some stuff off my chest. I feel good.
But Florida State played NC State this weekend. Some similar struggles with guys not being able to practice with the flu and different things. Ended up losing that game 28-14. They were down 14-0 and kicked an onside kick to start the second half. Got that back, scored a touchdown, gave up a touchdown, but then made it 21-14 and had the ball a couple of times, just could not get down the field to end up tying it up. NC State scored a touchdown late to make it 28-14 and ended up winning by that score. Florida State was in yet another close game in the fourth quarter. Just can't find a way right now to get over that hump and win. I don't really have a lot of takeaways other than the fact they're remaining competitive. They did it this week without their starting quarterback, which is good. I mean, we talked about in the last couple of years, Florida State has not won a game that Jordan Travis did not either start or take over and play significant snaps. They've won 7 games over the last 2 years, and he either started or was in each of those pretty heavily. They are 3-6 this year. They're 3-3 with him as a starter. Those three losses coming against Notre Dame, who is ranked, Clemson, and NC State, who's also ranked. So they play Miami this weekend.
Big
Miami's
one.
Miami's a 2.5-point favorite. and comes in after a couple of wins. Miami was kind of like, you know, we've gone from, you know, Miami starting as the biggest crap show of the year to then Florida State being the biggest crap show of the year. I think that the pressure is kind of off of, I think Florida is the team that people are talking about the most right now is like, what the heck is going on? But at
they
one
had
time,
to throw this to Paul, to be fair.
I don't think anybody was is shocked right now that Florida State's 3-5. I don't think anyone shocked that Miami's 5-4. I mean, I think they kind of thought Florida State would be slightly under average. I think Miami being just above average. But, yeah, Florida, you know, some people pick Florida to win every single game. But Florida being fighting for a bowl is not what I think
unexpected.
People expected. Miami at one point was 2-4. They've since won their last three games, all one score games. They beat NC State by one, they beat Pitt by four, and they beat Georgia Tech by three. The math on that is 8 points. So they've literally won the last three games by a combined one score.
Yeah.
They make games a lot tougher than they should be. They lost the two games before that on a couple of kind of last second plays. They lost to UVA 30-28. And then they lost to UNC 45-42. So their last five games have been, 2-5 is combined 13 points separate them and their opponents. I do think they find a way to beat Florida State this weekend, but I do think it'll be a good game. I think that Tyler Van Dyke has been really, really good throwing the ball as their quarterback. Their defense isn't very good. So I think we'll be able to run the ball on them a little bit, but I think that they're just a little bit better. But if Florida State can win this game, I think they win out. I think this is the toughest game left on the schedule. I do think – I saw a projection
the
other day.
You think that the Miami game is a tougher game than Florida for you?
Yes. Dude, I think it's more of a matchup thing. I know I said that about UNC as well, and then we ended up beating them, so maybe I'll just be right again on that. I'm going to say this every week.
There you go.
I think because I think Miami – that Van Dyke kid is really good. He's come in and he's got 15 touchdowns and four interceptions, almost 2,000 yards in like the five games he's played. He's been really, really good throwing the ball, and I think that's our biggest weakness is being able to stop good passing attacks. Mm-hmm. And I think he's a – no, I don't think he's a better quarterback right now than Emory Jones is. He's a better quarterback right now than Anthony Richardson is throwing the ball. And so Emory or Anthony running on us doesn't worry me as much. Watch what both of them will go for 75 yard touchdowns. Now that I said that, but that doesn't worry me as much. I don't,
to God's ears.
I don't think that Florida is going to be able to just pass all over us. And I think Miami will. And I think that's kind of what will be our downfall is we need a Florida type game where they want to run the ball, where they want to use clock, and we do the same thing, limit possessions, and then have a chance. So I think Miami's going to have like 12-ish possessions to our, you know, and do, you know, make us go out there and continue to put points up. And that's where I think we'll fall. So, yeah, I think that the Miami game is one that is slightly tougher. I saw let's get your take on that. I don't know how much you've watched Miami lately, but they've beaten two ranked teams in the last 3 weeks, and Florida's kind of floundering. I saw a projection that had Miami and Florida playing each other in the Gasparilla Bowl here in Tampa. That'd be fun.
That would be fun.
Do you – I think I'd pick Miami in that. Like right now, I just think that Miami's trending up and Florida's trending down.
Yeah, I mean, based on the trends, I could
– we'll see what our last 3 weeks kind of hold. But I think I think Miami would be I'm picking them to beat Florida State. I think they'd beat Florida too. Florida could come out and win their next 3 weeks and Miami could lose the next three. And then I'd probably change my take on that. But,
I mean, so, I think it would be a ball game and I don't think that's something we would have said at the beginning of the season. I think it'd be a ball game.
I think that, I know you don't want to say it, but I think Miami would win. You just want to say it and make you feel bad.
No, I'm good.
All right. So I think Florida State ends up losing this game and I don't think they cover. We'll get into some picks here in just a second, but I'd love to be wrong about this. I think it'll help that Jordan Travis is back, supposedly back, but I don't think it'll be enough. But he's been tweeting and practice and full participant in practice, things like that, that I think he'll be back. But we'll need some breaks to go our way. This is like our Kentucky game. Like you guys had Kentucky. This is kind of where this is for us. So it's going to be a close but no cigar. All right, let's do some picks. Oh, do we want to recap last week?
We do.
I don't think we do. I don't think you do. We both took Ole Miss to beat Liberty by 9.5, and we were both right about that. Man, Liberty really let me down because they lost by 14 or 13, I think. But they had so many turnovers in the first half, and then they got it close in the second half, and then just
couldn't get over the hump. Couldn't close the door.
But they, man, you know how tough those SEC teams are, you know, scraping by them with Liberty. We both took Florida State. I don't know what you were thinking there, but NC State ended up winning that by quite a few. That was much. We did this show much earlier in the week.
Yeah, we didn't know anything about them being sick.
Although that didn't come out till Saturday anyway, so I guess we wouldn't have.
Yeah,
but
that's true.
We both took Wake Forest, who did beat North Carolina. Wake was an underdog there. We both took Wake won, right? Am I crazy?
Wake won. I thought they were in jeopardy, right? But they won.
Wait, I could have got that wrong.
Okay, well.
No, Wake lost to UNC, and they didn't cover the spread, so we both got that wrong. So that actually is 5-3, and this is 6. So this is
I don't know why I thought they won.
32, 39, 27. Ugh, it gets worse for both of us. We both took Bama. That ended up not being a good pick. LSU kept that really, really close. Mm-hmm. That vaunted Bama team that you guys pounded your chest about losing to.
I mean, LSU has had top recruiting classes every year since, you know, for the last 15 years. So it's not surprising. There's a ton of talent on that team. There's more talent on that team than anybody else in the entire country outside of Clemson, Georgia, and Alabama. And Ohio State, maybe, but those are the top five.
I don't know about that.
But I mean, look at recruiting classes. It's absolutely true.
Is the Alabama loss you guys' best win of the year?
No.
What's Florida's best win?
That's a stupid question.
What's Florida's best win this year?
Probably at this point, Tennessee.
The standard is moved, I think. Texas A&M beat Auburn. I took Jimbo. You took
Auburn.
Auburn didn't work out very well. We both took Tennessee, and they won. Mm-hmm. You took UF. That didn't go the right way. And then I took Clemson. You took Louisville. So I went 5-3 on the week. You went 6-2-6. Takes us. I am 34-32, and you are 27-37. 37-39. Sorry, I went the wrong way with that. 27-39. You need a big comeback here, like 12 games back. You need to hit all five of these, six of these. Pittsburgh is a 6.5-point favorite against UNC. That game's tonight, Thursday night game.
Yeah. I like Thursday night games, right? They'll have something fun to focus on, but I don't know. Tell me the spread again.
Pittsburgh's a 6.5-point favorite against North Carolina.
Yeah. Give me North Carolina.
I know how you think they're one of the better teams in college football, so I definitely understand why you would take them. I'll take Pittsburgh just so we can be different.
Okay.
I just wrote the wrong letter next to each name, so good job on that. Michigan is a 1.5-point favorite at Penn State. Michigan's ranked number 8 right now. This is an interesting one for sure.
Yeah, which we didn't talk about this, but did you see where Michigan was ranked ahead of Michigan State in the playoff? And they said it's because they're a more complete team, except Michigan State just beat Michigan. So I don't know how, like, eye test somehow carries more weight than, like, actual outcome. But here we are. And give me Penn State.
Yeah. I'll go opposite you again. I think Penn State probably wins here, but I just want to not go with what you go with. Your bad luck. Georgia is a 20-point favorite against Tennessee. I like Georgia here.
Give me Tennessee. I don't think Tennessee wins, but I think there's a possibility they keep it closer.
Texas A&M is a 2.5-point favorite at Ole Miss.
Give me Ole Miss.
I like Ole Miss here too. I can't go different from you on this one. Wake is a 2-point favorite against North Carolina State. That's at Wake Forest.
Give me NC State.
I think I'm going to go Wake here. I think their offense is just a little bit better. It puts them over the hump. Florida State is a 2.5-point underdog to Miami. I like Miami here.
I like Miami as well.
Dang, I was hoping you'd go opposite so I could get another one on you. I'm excited for next week. I'm excited to get back on here and see how much Florida has just absolutely flipped a switch and how everybody on social media will be back on the.
Is there anything you got out of what I said that that made you think that I think a switch is going to be flipped?
No, I don't.
Okay. I'm just making sure that wasn't what you got out of what we just talked about for an hour and 8 minutes.
I'm just hoping that a flip has been switch has been flipped. If I could speak, I'm a big Dan Mullen fan. I hope he's there for like the next 10 years. Like I have,
you know what? I know that you say that. I do hope he's there for the next 10 years. I think he is Florida's coach next season, and I'm excited to see what hires are brought in.
Yeah. I think that, I'm just like you guys were happy that Rick stayed there forever. I think that we're happy that, Mullen's going to be there forever. So excited to see that team turn a corner. And then we could do like 2 weeks of Florida FSU preview. If I'm telling you, if Florida State beats Miami this weekend, I'm going to tell a lot of lies about us beating you guys. So,
okay. I'm here for that.
So, all right, cool. Well, thanks for those that hung out and listened to Allie lie about her team and listened to me tell the truth about what's really going on. So we'll see you guys next week. Have a great rest of your week and enjoy the games on Saturday. Go Noles.
Go Gators.